Hello everyone, welcome to another of our virtual videos to replace our first February attempt at a ILS NYC conference in New York, which unfortunately we've had to postpone through till April the 22nd due to the pandemic. But we wanted to run some interviews with the kind sponsors of the event and showcase their thought leadership and thank them for their ongoing support. You can still get a ticket for the April event. That's April the 22nd. Please do visit the Artemis website and you can secure a place at the conference today. So for this one of our event videos, I'm delighted to welcome Matt Gelber, Head of Insurance Investment Banking, and Andy DeVries, Managing Director of Insurance Investment Banking, both from Truist Securities, who are one of our associate sponsors for the conference. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Steve.
So, as ever, we're looking at the development of insurance-linked securities as our main focus, but Truist plays a specific role in that marketplace with its trust management and escrow servicing. But the company also provides a range of investment banking, capital raising, insurance broking services across a number of different divisions as well. And so we thought it'd be interesting to hear sort of both on the ILS side, but also more broadly on Matt and Andy's thoughts on the marketplace today. And so Matt, maybe I can begin with you and you could give us a bit of an overview of how Truist thinks about the insurance and reinsurance marketplace and also how the capital markets and importantly ILS fit into that as well.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. So I think Truist has got a very unique perspective, kind of to your comments around the broader insurance and ILS marketplace. Andy and I, as you mentioned, both work within Truist Securities, which is our investment banking division. Truist also is very unique in this, owns an entity called Truist Insurance. It's a separate line of business from where Andy and I work, but it's one of the largest retail and wholesale brokers in the U.S. And so, you know, a number of its clients, you know, are, I think, in and around, you know, the ILS and reinsurance market. So it kind of gives Andy and me and other folks on our team a unique perspective that other investment banks don't have. And as you mentioned, we also have the trust and escrow team, which has got a very good specialty niche in the ILS marketplace. But within the investment banking space, we really cover the full gamut, which kind of across the insurance industry, which I think gives us a unique perspective. Andy in particular covers a number of P&C insurance carriers, you know, which has been, I think, the source of a significant chunk of ILS issuance over the years. We have a team that focuses in the distribution ecosystem, you know, brokers, wholesalers, MGAs, and program managers, and also spend time, you know, with businesses and entities that help insurance companies manage the risk they take, be that around claims or technology or risk and data analytics. So it gives us a pretty broad view of what's going on in the market. And, you know, there's no question there's been a significant amount of capital moving toward the insurance sector in recent years. I think we've also seen an increasingly sophisticated and granular approach to risk selection. You know, just one data point, just the number of MGAs and program managers that have been attracting private equity capital over the last several years, and you know, niche insurers with specific expertise looking to carve out a place in the market, you know, kind of reflects just the flow of capital, you know, into the industry overall. And I think as part of that, you know, we've definitely seen, you know, growth and scale in the ILS markets and other capital market solutions that support, you know, that business innovation. You know, traditionally, you had kind of reinsurance was the kind of primary layer of last resort for a lot of P&C carriers. But, you know, we see that, you know, with the flow of capital coming into the market, you know, there's a bit of a disintermediation between, you know, the traditional insurance and reinsurance dynamic, you know, and with maybe a little bit of a blip in 2019, you know, the ILS market has seen kind of consistent and steady growth year over year. And, you know, we really expect more of the same. You know, it's a, you know, we'll talk more, I think, later in the discussion around just what makes, you know, ILS attractive, you know, to the broader insurance market and why investors are interested in it. But, you know, that incremental capital and capacity has had, you know, a strong and, you know, robust impact on all facets of the insurance industry kind of deal landscape across M&A and other capital markets opportunities. So, you know, it's been a very exciting time for the industry. And, you know, frankly, we see it continuing for a while.
Great. Thank you, Matt. That's a really good overview. So I'm going to turn to you now, Andy, and you speak with investors who provide capital into the insurance space all the time. And this is on the M&A, capital raising and distribution side of things, I guess, in the main. But how are your investor clients viewing the fundamentals of the market right now?
Yeah, I mean, the market remains very healthy. You know, as always, I think there's preference for certain lines of business, you know, vis-a-vis others. But that's something that, as everybody in the market's kind of aware of, it changes over time. I mean, for example, a couple of years ago, we had we saw a real demand swing towards longer tail casualty lines to offset what had been a very robust property cat market. And I think now there's been a little bit of a shift back and kind of a realization that there are some good returns to be made with property cat as part of a balanced book of business. And so that's how all of our professional investors are going to skew to kind of a more balanced approach to the sector across property and casualty. I will say also that there's been kind of an increasing penetration of other lines of business like private mortgage insurance, for example, in the ILS market that provides investors a much better opportunity at diversification and making those attractive risk-adjusted returns in a way that was maybe a little bit harder to do in more specific markets of a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that speaks well to the diversification within the asset class that is insurance and reinsurance too, which is that's actually going to be a focus at our April conference. So a good topic to bring up. Thank you. So Matt, insurance has always been a staple of the very large investors of the world. But do you see appetite increasing for insurance related opportunities at this point in time?
We do. You know, it's an interesting question. I mean, obviously, you know, just the growth in the ILS market indicates the investor demand, you know, for non-market correlated return, you know, and so it's a very logical, you know, investment to have in a broader portfolio. I think historically, you know, larger investors were the ones with the sophistication to kind of appreciate the benefits of that diversification and to understand the risk they're taking. You know, you want to balance between, you know, kind of the high growth, you know, high beta type, you know, market performance we've seen in the equity market, you know, through all of last year. Obviously, that's been a little choppy so far this year, you know, and more, you know, predictable, you know, income oriented, stable style investing, you know, and the insurance, you know, an ILS kind of ecosystem offers a nice, you know, aspect to balance that portfolio management. Honestly, you know, until recently, I think that was a bit out of reach for more, you know, kind of middle market, mass affluent individual investors. But there's been a broader trend going on across, I think, investment management, really going back, you know, a decade, you know, where you're seeing private equity funds and specialty commercial real estate funds, you know, hedge funds and other alternative investors devising and structuring ways for more kind of everyday investors to be able to participate in the market. And there's absolutely no reason that an individual investor or a smaller institutional investor can't get the same portfolio benefits that some of the more sophisticated larger investors do. And so we've seen a number of, I think, niche funds develop over the last several years with a focus on ILS that, you know, give over time more opportunity for, I think, Main Street investors to participate in the asset class. I think we're still, you know, in the nascency of that. But if you just kind of look to other alternative asset classes and how that has developed, I mean, the institutional investors will always be a significant chunk of the capital in the asset class. But over time, across a number of other examples, including, frankly, in just stocks, you know, there's been a gradual kind of retailization of, you know, the investor pools. And we expect the same thing to happen in ILS over time as the opportunities become more accessible to the market.
Yeah, I guess generally over the last few years, there's an increasing awareness of what alternative investing is among the sort of high net worth retail community as well. So that bodes well for all asset classes that can deliver a relatively uncorrelated return like this.
Yep. Now, exactly.
Andy, we're in a stage in the market now where reinsurance has been firming the pricing, that is, for a few years. And that's obviously one of the factors helping to make asset classes like ILS increasingly attractive. Do you think this could result in sort of expanding the investor base out a little bit? And maybe you could sort of carry on from where Matt left off. Do you think we'll get more generalist investors? And I'm thinking money managers and the like here, and maybe multi-asset strategy managers.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great segue for sure. Look, ILS remains remains very disruptive to kind of traditional risk transfer pricing. Said differently, you know, traditional reinsurance pricing. It's obviously not a product that's going away for a few reasons. I think probably chief among them, as Matt discussed previously, there's a real diversification benefit to a, you know, non-correlated asset like an ILS instrument that's not, you know, at all or barely correlated to financial markets. So, you know, sophisticated investors will always have that need as part of a broader portfolio. The generalist question is a really interesting one, actually, in my mind, because I think, you know, my perspective is in a low rate environment, I think there's probably going to be, you know, a little bit more kind of the search for yield is going to drive generalists probably a little bit more toward the product than they would otherwise. I think that, you know, the correlation benefit aside, I do think it'll be interesting to see what happens in a rising rate environment. So if we see the, you know, sub-investment grade index start to tick up and it's the move is really caused by rates as opposed to underlying credit issues, then you could see kind of the potential for generalist attention to go back to maybe traditional fixed income. You know, an investment is only as good as the opportunity cost of that investment. So if we end up in a higher rate environment where, you know, other kind of more traditional fixed income is going to be, you know, more competitive from a yield perspective, I think it kind of remains to be seen how sticky the generalist group is within the market. But I think given the current inflationary environment in the United States specifically, I do think that we're going to find out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And obviously, everybody talks about ILS being a floating rate instrument in the main, so benefits from rising rates, but it can lag behind, and that can be enough to mean that some investors get diverted elsewhere, I suppose. The longer term fundamentals obviously are a different matter. Now, Matt, moving back to you, Truist provides a trust and escrow service specifically to insurance and securities transactions. And as these sort of govern and protect collateral used to underpin deals in the marketplace, so they're critical really to getting transactions done and protecting investor capital. How important is it that these services come with a real institutional quality?
Oh, it's absolutely critical. I mean, and I think, you know, we've got a very well developed capability, a team led by Donnie Tong, who actually I think is the connection between Artemis and Truist, you know, was kind enough to offer us the opportunity to talk a little bit more about our broader platform, you know, on this as part of this discussion. But, you know, we have a very well developed expertise kind of based around trust, you know, and most importantly, really understand the nuances of ILS and reinsurance transactions. So it enables us to work effectively, efficiently, and seamlessly with the many parties that are involved with a specific transaction. You know, it's a trust team built on trust, you know, so we operate with transparency, you know, timeliness, you know, the clients always come first. And, you know, we understand kind of the economics of the deal and how they work, but ensure parties have visibility to, you know, that process and transparency over time. So, you know, we've got a very well-developed expertise, and you know, our real goal is just to make it seamless and easy for our clients and as kind of transparent and as efficient as possible.
Yeah, well, it's a really important piece of the puzzle when it comes to issuing large transactions such as catastrophe bonds, and it's often overlooked, unfortunately, but just as vital as some of the other services that we see in this industry. So, Andy,
Truist also has, you know, one of the better balance sheets, you know, in the banking industry. And obviously, when you're in the trust and escrow services game, you know, you want to know that, you know, the money is safe, and, you know, that the strength of that balance sheet and our credit rating is another integral part to what we do.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that's a really good point. So Andy, finally, going to move back to you and ask. So when you speak with investors in your day job, what are the kind of challenges and questions you come up against when you're discussing insurance or reinsurance with them?
Yeah, it's interesting because we've been talking a lot about kind of all the capital in the sector right now, which would lead you to believe that there's, you know, infinite capacity out there for people looking to affect some kind of risk transfer. But that's really the issue, is consistent capacity. I think I talked a little bit at the beginning about how the market tends to, you know, prefer certain business lines and give, kind of given, you know, whatever the underlying market condition is. I think the kind of consistency of capacity is really kind of the golden goose for people to that are looking to really kind of optimize their business. I mean, we see this in the MGA space a lot right now. I think there's a lot of kind of a have and have nots dynamic around, you know, what kind of business are you writing, and is it in favor with your risk transfer partners right now? And so we see a lot of, well, I should say that the varying appetite for the paper that coming out of an MGA is like the worst thing that you can be faced with as an owner or a management team of an MGA, because that's obviously core to what you do, and you can't just turn off the, you know, you can't just turn off the spigot as it is in terms of new writings. And so I think what we see a lot of MGAs trying to get creative around more consistent risk transfer, in even exploring things like standing up a balance sheet or installing a reciprocal exchange, which is something that's been a fairly hot topic in the market over the recent term. But I think, you know, to kind of come back to ILS, I think that's been something that's been utilized as well as a capacity option, you know, for those looking to, you know, even kind of non-risk bearing entities to kind of optimize, you know, what they're doing, their ability to continue to write business in the MGA market. Now, that's a short to medium term solution given the tenor of an ILS product, but you know, we'll see what that demand looks like in 3 years. So I think that's, I would really kind of think about that more as a short to medium term solution, as more a relative to kind of the permanent solution that is your own balance sheet or a reciprocal exchange.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Thank you, Andy. And actually, it speaks to one of the things that comes up in my discussions quite a lot with investors, is people asking, so where are the perpetual facilities that we can deploy our capital into but have liquidity out of when we want it as well? So I think that there's a lot of demand for access to the risk. And I think that can result, with a bit of innovation, hopefully, in some more permanent sort of capital facilities that can be really useful to the likes of an MGA. Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you very much, Matt. Really appreciate you both spending some time with me today.
Thank you for having us, Steve.
Thank you to Truist for the support for the event. For those watching, please do join us in April in New York. You can still get your tickets over at the Artemis website. Thanks again, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks.